Welcome, everyone. You are listening to Conversations on a Tightrope with your host, Atrevida. Today is Election Day, and I decided to pay tribute to whom I believe are the most important people in a society. Out of those people who engage in the arts. A brief Wikipedia definition is, the arts are a vast subdivision of culture composed of many creative endeavors and disciplines. The arts encompass visual arts, literary arts, and the performing arts, music, theater, dance, and film, among others. So for the next hour, I would like to play some political clips from YouTube, political songs, and the political comedy of my favorite but now deceased George Carlin. Before I begin, I would like to say thanks to WGXC for airing the Cairo Candidates Forum live from the Cairo Town Hall this week. As a resident of Cairo who could not attend, it was a rare opportunity and a privilege to be able to hear what the candidates of my town had to say on their own behalf in real time. It's just another example of the ways in which WGXC can empower the community. My kudos to you, WGXC. Now I would like to start the program by playing a couple of clips which will remind us, because people, especially Americans, have very short memories of what was going on in our administration before President Barack Obama came into office. So let's remember the 8 years before President Obama. But I would like you to think of this word. It's called obscurantism. It means opposition to the increase and spread of knowledge and the deliberate obscurity or evasion of clarity. So with obscurantism in mind, listen carefully to the following clip. John Stewart speaks first. Rumsfeld. There'll be an interviewer, and then you will hear Bush, Cheney, Colin Powell, and at the end, Sean Penn.
So they have a really delicate balance to walk between keeping us relatively fearful, but not so fearful that we stop what we're doing and really examine how it is that they've been waging.
There are a lot of people who lie and get away with it. And that we will in fact find weapons or evidence of weapons.
Well, first of all, I haven't lied.
Intelligence gathered by this and other governments leaves no doubt that the Iraqi regime continues to possess and conceal some of the most lethal weapons ever devised.
I don't know anybody that I can think of who has contended that the Iraqis had nuclear weapons.
Cheney speaking.
And we believe he has, in fact, reconstituted nuclear weapons.
Colin Powell speaking.
Saddam Hussein is determined to get his hands on a nuclear bomb.
We cannot wait for the final proof.
He's got him. He's got him.
The smoking gun.
He's got him.
That could come in the form of a mushroom cloud.
Colin Powell didn't lie.
My colleagues, every statement I make today is backed up by sources, solid sources. These are not assertions. What we're giving you are facts and conclusions based on solid intelligence.
Are people going to find out the truth?
Cheney speaking.
I have not suggested there's a connection between Iraq and the 9/11.
You have said in the past that it was, quote, pretty well confirmed.
No, I never said that.
Okay.
No, absolutely not. What I said was, it's been pretty well confirmed that he did go to Prague and he did meet with a senior official of the Iraqi intelligence service.
He said there were three main reasons for going to war in Iraq. Weapons of mass destruction.
Saddam Hussein has gone to elaborate lengths, spent enormous sums, taken great risks to build and keep weapons of mass destruction.
The claim that Iraq was sponsoring terrorists would have attacked us on 9/11.
Before September the 11th, many in the world believed that Saddam Hussein could be contained. Secretly and without fingerprints, he could provide one of his hidden weapons to terrorists. Or help them develop their own.
What did Iraq have to do with what?
The attack on the World Trade Center.
Nothing!
And that Iraq had purchased nuclear materials from Niger.
The regime is seeking a nuclear bomb.
All three of those turned out to be false.
First, just if I might correct a misperception, I don't think we ever said, at least I know I didn't say, that there was a direct connection between September the 11th and Saddam Hussein. there are a lot of people who lie and get away with it.
Sean Penn speaking.
When you have a precedent set like that, and you have somebody, George Tenet, acknowledging in his book that he knew that the administration was deceiving the American people into a situation that is murdering young men and women from this country and others, that George Tenet and Dick Cheney and Condoleezza Rice and George Bush et al. Should be in jail.
Next, you will hear a short clip from an interview in 2008 on BigThink.com. It's with Joseph Stiglitz, an economist from Columbia University, and it's about how the Bush administration ruined America.
There's actually a very clear connection between the war, which has been a disaster, and our economy, which has been a disaster.
Some Americans believe that they feel they're carrying the burden because of this economy. The economy they say is suffering because of this
war. I don't agree with that.
You don't agree with that? It has nothing to do with the economy, the war? The
spending on the war? I don't think so. I think actually the spending in the war might help with jobs.
Yeah,
because we're buying equipment and people are working. I think this economy is down because we built too many houses.
While President Bush claimed the war has nothing to do with the economy, one of the country's leading economists has just published a book that puts an estimated price tag on the war in Iraq, $3 trillion.
What they claim as the cost of the Iraq war in the budget is not the full cost. There are the operational costs that everybody understands, but then there are costs hidden elsewhere in the defense budget. But then there are really some very big costs hidden elsewhere, like contractors. We pay their insurance through the Labor Department. But the most important budgetary cost that we haven't talked about publicly are the cost of veterans, their disability, veterans, health care, that will total hundreds of billions of dollars over the next decades. Then you go beyond that budgetary cost to the cost of the economy. For instance, when somebody gets disabled, the disability pay is just a fraction of what the loss to their family, to the income that they could have otherwise earned. And then you go beyond that to the macroeconomic cost. The fact that the war has been associated with an increasing price of oil. We're spending money, oil exports, Saudi Arabia, other oil exporting countries. That's money that's not being spent here at home.
So do you think America's wasted that money?
It's worse than wasted. Because today there is more bitterness. We've lost, as I said, the hearts and minds of the people. It will take us a long time to go back to where we were, let alone persuade them that there is an alternative way, a way of becoming integrated in the global society.
Country music's got mamas and daddies. We got bar rooms and no heartbreak songs. But I'm here today to stand up and say how I feel about my home sweet home. What's left, what's right, and what's wrong. And I'm taking my country back. Son, you ain't been doing her right. Oh, I've been watching you and I don't like been treating my stars and stripes. You took our jobs and sent them overseas. Now we owe billions to the red Chinese. You blew the budget and you bossed our wrath. So I'm taking my country back. We had a bundle in the treasury drawer, more than there had ever been before. But every day we're drowning deeper in debt. Maybe 4 years should be all you get. Then you gave tax breaks to the millionaires. And you tried to make the working man pay. But you can't tax a man when his job's not there. Now look at where we are today. Hey, I'm taking my country back. Son, you ain't been. Saudis treat you like you're royalty. You blew the budget and you understand why you were hot. 'Cause Bin Laden never did get caught. So you said we had Saddam to blame. Tried to tell us it was all the same. But now the years roll by and our kids keep dying. You don't even have a plan to bring them home. To those WMD you promised on TV.
You just finished listening to Tony Stampley singing Democracy Now! Taking My Country Back. This word obscurantism is so relevant to me, and what is so obvious, at least in this country. And I'd like to play a clip of George Carlin speaking on obscurantism. He doesn't use the word, but describes it and tells why the controllers of our country promote it. So this is George Carlin, who talks about who really controls America.
There's a reason for this. There's a reason education sucks, and it's the same reason that it will never, ever, ever be fixed. It's never going to get any better. Don't look for it. Be happy with what you got. Because the owners of this country don't want that. I'm talking about the real owners now. The big, the wealthy, that... The real owners, the big wealthy business interests that control things and make all the important decisions. Forget the politicians. They're irrelevant. The politicians are put there to give you the idea that you have freedom of choice. You don't. You have no choice. You have owners. They own you. They own everything. They own all the important land. They own and control the corporations. They've long since bought and paid for the Senate, the Congress, the state houses, the city halls. They got the judges in their back pockets. And they own all the big media news, all the big media companies, so they control just about all of the news and information you get to hear. They got you by the... They spend billions of dollars every year lobbying to get what they want. Well, we know what they want. They want more for themselves and less for everybody else. But I'll tell you what they don't want. They don't want a population of citizens capable of critical thinking. They don't want well-informed, well-educated people capable of critical thinking. They're not interested in that. That doesn't help them. That's against their interest. That's right. You know something? They don't want people who are smart enough to sit around the kitchen table and figure out how badly they're getting by a system that threw them overboard 30... years ago. They don't want that. You know what they want? They want obedient workers. Obedient workers. People who are just smart enough to run the machines and do the paperwork and just dumb enough to passively accept all these increasingly shittier jobs with the lower pay, the longer hours, the reduced benefits, the end of overtime, and the vanishing pension that disappears the minute you go to collect it. And now they're coming for your Social Security money. They want your retirement money. They want it back. So they can give it to their criminal friends on Wall Street. And you know something? They'll get it. They'll get it all from you sooner or later because they own this place. It's a big club, and you ain't in it. You and I are not in the big club. By the way, it's the same big club they used to beat you over the head with all day long when they tell you what to believe. All day long, beating you over the head in their media, telling you what to believe, what to think, and what to buy. The table is tilted, folks. The game is rigged. And nobody seems to notice. Nobody seems to care. Good, honest, hardworking people, white collar, blue collar, doesn't matter what color shirt you have on. Good, honest, hardworking people continue. These are people of modest means. Continue to elect these rich who don't give a f*** about them. They don't give a f*** about you. They don't give a f*** about you. They don't care about you at all, at all, at all. Man, you know?
And the next song describes what kinds of citizens are a product of obscurantism. It's by Todd, T-O-D-D, Snyder, and it's called Conservative Christian Right-Wing Republicans.
Conservative Christian Right-Wing Republican Straight White American Male Gay bashing, black fearing, war fighting, tree killing, regional leaders of sale. Frat housing, cake tapping, shirt tucking, back slapping, haters of hippies like me. Tree hugging, peace loving, pot smoking, porn watching, lazy hippies like me. Hugging, lovemaking, pro-choice and gay wedding, widespread digging hippies like me. Skin color blinded, conspiracy minded, protesters of corporate greed. We who have nothing, and most likely will till we all end up locked up in jails by conservative Christian. Right-wing Republican, straight white American male. Diamonds and dogs, boys and girls, living together in two separate worlds. Following leaders up mountains of shame, looking for someone to blame. And dogs, boys and girls, living together in two separate worlds, following leaders up mountains of shame, looking for someone to blame. I know who I like to blame. Conservative Christian. Right-wing Republican, straight white American male. Soul-saving, flag-waving, rush-loving, land-paving, personal friends to the quail. Quite diligently, working so hard to keep the free reins of this democracy. From tree-hugging, peace-loving, pot-smoking, barefooting, folks singing hippies like me. Tree-hugging, peace-loving, pot-smoking, porn-watching, lazy-ass hippies like me.
The next clip addresses the confusion and frustration of those who were also duped by obscurantism on the Iraq War. It happened in New York City at Occupy Wall Street in October, and it is a soldier who had served in Iraq and Afghanistan.
This is not a war zone. This is not a war zone. These are unarmed people. It does not make you tough to hurt these people. There's nothing tough about it. Nothing. If you want to go fight, go to Iraq and Afghanistan. Leave these people alone. They're U.S. citizens. U.S. citizens. U.S. citizens. U.S. Stop hurting these people, man. Why y'all do this to our people? I've been to Iraq 14 months for my people. You come over here and hurt them. They don't have guns. They don't have guns. Why are you hurting these people? It doesn't make any sense. It doesn't make any sense. How do you sleep at night? There is no honor in this. You're here to protect us. Why are you hurting U.S. citizens? This is the United States of America. Why are you hurting people? If you want to go kill and hurt people, go to Iraq. Why are you hurting U.S. citizens? Did you get honor out of this? Do you get honor out of hitting people with batons? Is that what you get?
This is unbelievable that y'all are doing this to people. Why are y'all doing this to people? Now, I know that everybody's not bad. Why are y'all doing this to people?
These people don't have guns! My whole family protected this country! So why do you allow this?
Y'all want to shut me up.
There's a war going on! Nobody has guns! Why are y'all treating people like this? This is America! Why are y'all treating people like this? Nobody's trying to hurt you guys! There are no bullets flying out here! There are no bullets flying! How tough are you?
There's no honor in hurting unarmed civilians.
Did you see something you get tonight? Respect. What did you see tonight that bothered you?
I was here October 5th. I saw them beating people that had nothing to do with anything, just grabbing people out of the crowd. There's no honor in my mom, my father, everybody has served in Iraq, Afghanistan. Well, I did 14 months in Iraq. My father was in Afghanistan. My mother did a year in Iraq. We fought for this country. I don't come home. I'm in New York City. I am from New York City. And these cops are hurting people that I fought to protect. There's no reason for this. There's no honor in hurting unarmed civilians. And I won't let it happen. Have a good night.
What's your name?
Old New York, Sergeant Shamar Thomas.
That was quite emotional. So let's play an old 60s song by Phil Oakes. It's called What Are You Fighting For?
Oh, you tell me that there's danger to this land you call your own. And you watch them build the war machines right beside your home. And you tell me that you're ready to go marching to the war. Oh, I know you're set for fighting, but what are you fighting for? Before you pack your rifle and sail across the sea, just think upon the southern part of land that you call free. Oh, there's many kinds of slavery, and we've found many more. Yes, I know you're set for fighting, but what are you fighting for? And before you walk out on your job and answer to the call, just think about the millions who have no job at all. And the men who wait for handouts with their eyes upon the floor. I know you're set for fighting, but what are you fighting for? Turn on your TV, turn it on so loud, and watch the fool a-smiling there and tell me that you're proud. And listen to your radio, the noise it starts to pour. Oh, I know you're set for fighting, but what are you fighting for? Read your morning papers, read every single line, and tell me if you can believe that simple world you find. Read every slanted word till your eyes are getting sore. I know you're set for fighting, but what are you fighting for? And listen to your leaders, the ones that won the race, as they stand right there before you and lie into your face. If you ever try to buy them, you know what they stand for. I know you're set for fighting, but what are you fighting for? Put a ragged clothes upon your back and sleep upon the ground, and tell police about your rights as they drag you down. And ask them as they lead you to some deserted door. Yes, I know you're set for fighting, but what are you fighting for? But the hardest thing I'll ask you, if you will only try, is take your children by their hands and look into their eyes. And there you'll see the answer you should have seen before. If you'll win the wars at home, there'll be no fighting anymore.
The next two clips will be by George Carlin. The first one is You Have No Rights, and the second is The Bible, Swearing on the Bible.
Rights.
Boy, everyone in this country's always running around yammering about their rights. I have a right. You have no right. We have a right. They don't have a right. Folks, I hate to spoil your fun, but there's no such thing as rights, okay? They're imaginary. We made them up, like the boogeyman. The three little pigs, Pinocchio, Mother Goose, like that. Rights are an idea. They're just imaginary. They're a cute idea. Cute. But that's all. Cute and fictional. But if you think you do have rights, let me ask you this. Where do they come from? People say, well, they come from God. They're God-given rights. Oh, here we go again. Here we go again. The God excuse. The last refuge of a man with no answers and no argument. It came from God. Anything we can't describe must have come from God. Personally, folks, I believe that if your rights came from God, he would have given you the right to some food every day, and he would have given you the right to a roof over your head. God would have been looking out for you. God would have been looking out for you. You know that? But let's say it's true. Let's say God gave us these rights. Why would he give us a certain number of rights? The Bill of Rights of this country has 10 stipulations, okay? 10 rights. And apparently God was doing sloppy work that week because we've had to amend the Bill of Rights an additional 17 times. So God forgot a couple of things, like slavery. Just slipped his mind. But let's say God gave us the original 10. He gave the British 13. The British Bill of Rights has 13 stipulations. The Germans have 29. The Belgians have 25. The Swedish have only 6. And some people in the world have no rights at all. What kind of a God-given deal is that? No rights at all? Why would God give different people in different countries different numbers of different rights? Boredom? Amusement? Bad arithmetic? Do we find out at long last, after all this time, that God is weak in math skills? Doesn't sound like divine planning to me. Sounds more like human planning. Sounds more like one group trying to control another group. In other words, business as usual in America. Now, if you think you do have rights, one last assignment for you. Next time you're at the computer, get on the internet, go to Wikipedia. When you get to Wikipedia, in the search field for Wikipedia, I want you to type in Japanese Americans 1942, and you'll find out all about your precious rights, okay? All right. You know about it. You know about it. In 1942, there were 110,000 Japanese American citizens in good standing, law-abiding people who were thrown into internment camps. The only right they had, right this way, into the internment camps. Just when these American citizens needed their rights the most, their government took them away. And rights aren't rights if someone can take them away. They're privileges. That's all we've ever had in this country is a bill of temporary privileges. And if you read the news even badly, you know that every year the list gets shorter and shorter and shorter. You see how sooner or later? Yeah. Sooner or later, the people in this country are going to realize the government does not give a f*** about them. Government doesn't care about you or your children or your rights or your welfare or your safety. It simply doesn't give a f*** about you. It's interested in its own power. That's the only thing, keeping it and expanding it wherever possible. Personally, when it comes to rights, I think one of two things is true. I think either we have unlimited rights or we have no rights at all. Swearing on the Bible. They tell you to raise your right hand, place your left hand on the Bible. Does this stuff really matter? Which hand? Does God really give a f- about details like this? Suppose you put your right hand in the Bible, you raise your left hand. Would that count? Or would God say, sorry, wrong hand, try again? And why does one hand have to be raised? What is the magic in this gesture? This seems like some sort of a primitive voodoo mojo shtick. Why not put your left hand on the Bible, let your right hand hang down by your side? It's more natural. Or put it in your pocket. But let's get back to the Bible, America's favorite national theatrical prop. Suppose the Bible they hand you to swear on is upside down, or backward, or both, and you swear to tell the truth on an upside down, backward Bible. Would that count? Suppose the Bible they hand you is an old Bible and half the pages are missing. Suppose all they have is a Chinese Bible in an American court.
or a Braille Bible and you're not blind. Suppose they hand you an upside-down, backward Chinese Braille Bible with half the pages missing. At what point does all of this stuff just break down and become just a lot of stupid that somebody made up? They've made it up, folks. It's make-believe. It's make-believe. Now, all right. Okay. Let's leave the Bible aside. We'll get back to the science fiction reading later. The more important question is, what is the big deal about swearing to God in the first place? Why does swearing to God mean you're going to tell the truth? Wouldn't affect me. If they said to me, you swear to tell the truth, the whole truth, and nothing but the truth, to help you God, I'd say, yeah. I'll tell you about as much truth as the people who wrote in the Bible. How do you like that? Huh? Swearing on the Bible doesn't mean anything. It's kid. Swearing to God is kid stuff. Did you know, you remember when you were a kid, if you told another kid something he didn't quite believe, he'd say, you swear to God? I would always say, yeah, I swear to God, even if I was lying. Why not? What's going to happen if I lie? Nothing. Nothing happens if you lie, unless you get caught, and that's a whole different story. Sometimes a kid would think he was being slick with me, and he'd say, you swear on your mother's grave? I'd say, yeah. Why not? First of all, my mother was alive. She didn't even have a grave. Second of all, even if she was dead, what's she going to do? Rise from the grave and come and haunt me? Come and haunt me? All because I told a lie to an 8-year-old? Get real, will you? Swearing to God doesn't mean anything. Swearing on the Bible doesn't mean anything. You know why? Because Bible or no Bible, God or no God, if it suits their purposes, people are going to lie in court. The police do it all the time. All the time. Yes, they do. It's part of their job to protect, to serve, and to commit perjury whenever it supports the state's case. Swearing on the Bible is just one more way of controlling people and keeping them in line, and it's one more thing that holds us back as a species.
Every 10 years, following the national census, politicians in the city council, state legislature, and Congress redraw new boundaries for voting districts. It's called gerrymandering. It affects who gets elected, schools your children must go to, and other interests in the community. The public has nothing to do with it, and instead of helping communities, politicians use it to fix elections. Some states have ballots to put the power in the hands of the citizens. I would like to see New York State residents draw up proposals to end gerrymandering. We need to educate ourselves, so please go to endgerrymandering, GERRYMANDERING.com, so we can have a more democratic voting system.
Now, there's one thing you might have noticed I don't complain about. Politicians. Everybody complains about politicians. Everybody says they suck.
Yeah.
Well, where do people think these politicians come from? They don't fall out of the sky. They don't pass through a membrane from another reality. They come from American parents and American families, American homes, American schools, American churches, American businesses, and American universities, and they're elected by American citizens. This is the best we can do, folks. This is what we have to offer. It's what our system produces. Garbage in, garbage out. If you have selfish, ignorant citizens, you're going to get selfish, ignorant leaders. And term limits ain't going to do you any good. You're just going to wind up with a brand new bunch of selfish, ignorant Americans. So maybe it's not the politicians who suck. Maybe something else sucks around here, like the public. Yeah, the public sucks. There's a nice campaign slogan for somebody. The public sucks. Because if it's really just the fault of these politicians, then where are all the other bright people of conscience? Where are all the bright, honest, intelligent Americans ready to step in and save the nation and lead the way? We don't have people like that in this country. Everybody's at the mall, taking his credit card out of his fanny pack and buying a pair of sneakers with lights in them. So I have solved this little political dilemma for myself in a very simple way. On election day, I stay home. I don't vote. I don't vote. Two reasons I don't vote. First of all, it's meaningless. This country was bought and sold and paid for a long time ago. They shuffle around every 4 years. Doesn't mean a thing. And secondly, I don't vote because I believe if you vote, you have no right to complain. People like to twist that around, I know. They say, well, if you don't vote, you have no right to complain. But where's the logic in that? If you vote and you elect dishonest, incompetent people, and they get into office and screw everything up, well, you are responsible for what they have done. You caused the problem. You voted them in. You have no right to complain. I, on the other hand, who did not vote, who, in fact, did not even leave the House on election day, am in no way responsible for what these people have done and have every right to complain as loud as I want about the mess you created that I had nothing to do with. So I know that a little later on this year you're going to have another one of those really swell presidential elections that you like so much. You'll enjoy yourselves. It'll be a lot of fun. I'm sure as soon as the election is over, your country will improve immediately.
Now I'd like to play George Carlin, who was interviewed by Keith Olbermann on MSNBC, and it's called This Country Is Finished.
I mentioned Bob and Ray. Those were my heroes when I was a kid. At the height of Watergate, I got to interview them, and I said, you know, why don't you do, because they'd gone after McCarthy in a limited way, but a very effective way. So why didn't you do more political humor? And Ray Goulding said, how could we make that funnier? Yeah. Do you feel that way about President Bush?
Well, I use the sledgehammer. I don't bother with the rapier on Bush. And I don't really do a lot of political humor, but I have some glancing blows in the current show that I'm developing. And one of them is the reference to him as Governor Bush and the fact that I will always think of him, no matter where they hang his portrait, no matter where they put his statue. That's what he is. He's Governor Bush, because that's the last elected office he held legally in this country.
The other day, I quoted in this newscast, first item in the newscast, the seven words you can't say on television, the story of them, and the fact that everybody forgets that the first part of that story is the guy who had his phone tapped and would answer the phone, bleep Hoover.
Yeah.
We're back there. How did we get back to the same position that we were when you made that joke originally in the 70s?
You're talking about wiretapping and spying. I think power does what it wants. And now they're just more naked about it. Now they just put it right out front and say, this is what we're doing to you folks. It's, this country's finished. It's been sliding downhill a long time. And everybody's got a cell phone that makes pancakes, so they don't want to rock the boat. They don't want to make any trouble. People have been bought off by gizmos and toys in this country, and no one questions things anymore. Seriously, that's what I love about your show. I mean, you bring the thing right to them, and that's the only way to do it.
If you got the platform and you're not doing something with it, you might as well have a trained monkey out here.
The next song I would like to play is by James McMurtry, We Can't Make It Here.
There's a Vietnam vet with a cardboard sign sitting there by the left turn line. Flag on his wheelchair flapping in the breeze, one leg missing and both hands free. No one's paying much mind to him. The VA budget's just stretched so thin, and now there's more coming back from the Mideast war. We can't make it here anymore. And that big old building was a textile mill. It fed our kids and it paid our bills, but they turned us out and they closed the doors. We can't make it here anymore. You see those pallets piled up on the loading dock? They're just gonna sit there till they rot, 'cause there's nothing to ship, nothing to pack, just busted concrete and rusted tracks. Empty storefronts around the square, there's a needle in the gutter and glass everywhere. You don't come down here unless you're looking to score. We can't make it here anymore. The bar's still open, but man, it's slow. The tip jar's light and the register's low. The bartender don't have much to say. The regular crowd's getting thinner each day. Some have maxed out all their credit cards. Some are working two jobs and living in cars. Minimum wage won't pay for a roof. Won't pay for a drink if you gotta have proof. Try it yourself, Mr. CEO. See how far $5.15 an hour will go. Take a part-time job at one of your stores. I bet you can't make it here anymore. And there's a high school girl with a bourgeois dream, just like the pictures in the magazine. She found on the floor of the laundromat. A woman with kids can forget all that. If she comes up pregnant, what'll she do? Forget the career, forget about school. Can she live on faith, live on hope, high on Jesus and hooked on dope? When it's way too late to just say no, you can't make it here anymore. Should I hate a people for the shade of their skin or the shape of their eyes? Yeah, right. Now I'm stocking shirts in the Walmart store, just like the ones we made before. Except this one came from Singapore. I guess we can't make it here anymore. Should I hate a people for the shade of their skin or the shape of their eyes or the shape I'm in? Should I hate them for having our jobs today? No, I hate the men sent the jobs away. I can see them all now, they haunt my dreams, all lily white and squeaky clean. They've never known want, they'll never know need. They're stinking, their kids won't bleed. Their kids won't bleed in their damn little war, and we can't make it here anymore. We'll work for food, we'll die for oil, we'll kill for power, to us the spoils. The billionaires get to pay less tax, the working poor get to fall through the cracks. So let them eat jelly beans, let them eat cake, let them eat whatever it takes. They can join the Air Force or join the Corps if they can't make it here anymore. So that's how it is, that's what we got, if the president wants to admit it or not. You can read it in the paper, read it on the wall, hear it on the wind if you're listening at all. Get out of that limo and look us in the eye. Call us on a cell phone, tell us all why. In Dayton, Ohio, Portland, Maine, or a cotton gin out on the great high plains, it's done closed down, along with the school and the hospital and the swimming pool. And dust devils dance in the noonday heat, and there's rats in the alley and trash in the street, gang graffiti on a boxcar door. You can't make it here anymore.
Okay, folks, let's now listen to a Randy Newman song, Kingfish, by Levon Helm.
Well, there's 100,000 Frenchmen in New Orleans. In New Orleans, there are Frenchmen everywhere. But your house could burn down, all your babies could drown. Would a none of them Frenchmen care? Everybody, gather round. Loosen up your suspenders, hunker down on the ground. I may crack up, you are too, but don't I take good care of you? Who built the highway from Baton Rouge? Who put up your hospital and built your school? Like you know the Cambridge crew.
Now, I want us not to forget how great we felt when an intelligent president was elected in 2008. So I'm going to play you a 2012 presidential video.
I will never forget who this victory truly belongs to. It belongs to you. It belongs to you. I was never the likeliest candidate for this office. We didn't start with much money or many endorsements. Our campaign was not hatched in the halls of Washington. It began in the backyards of Des Moines, in the living rooms of Concord, in the front porches of Charleston. It grew strength from the young people who rejected the myth of their generation's apathy. It drew strength from the not-so-young people who braved the bitter cold and scorching heat to knock on doors of perfect strangers. You did it because you understand the enormity of the task that lies ahead. This victory alone is not the change we seek. It is only the chance for us to make that change. And that cannot happen if we go back to the way things were. It can't happen without you, without a new spirit of service, a new spirit of sacrifice. For even as we celebrate tonight, we know the challenges that tomorrow will bring are the greatest of our lifetime. There's new jobs to be created, new schools to build, and threats to meet, alliances to repair. The road ahead will be long. The climb will be steep. We may not get there in 1 year or even in one term. But America, I have never been more hopeful than I am tonight that we will get there. I promise you, we as a people will get there. America, we have come so far. We have seen so much, but there's so much more to do.
The next song on the agenda is Democracy by Leonard Cohen. In 2008, he performed it in the PBS special Leonard Cohen Live in London.
I'm sentimental, if you know what I mean. I love the country, but I can't stand the scene. And I'm neither left or right. I'm just staying home tonight, getting lost in that hopeless little screen. But I'm stubborn as those garbage bags that time cannot decay. I'm junk, but I'm still holding up this little wild bouquet. Democracy is coming to the USA. It's coming through a hole in the air from those nights in Tiananmen Square. It's coming from the feel that this ain't exactly real, or it's real, but it ain't exactly there. From the war against disorder, from the sirens night and day,
from the fires of the homeless, from the ashes of the gay. Democracy is coming to the USA.
It's coming through a crack in the wall on a visionary flood of alcohol. From the staggering account of the Sermon on the Mount, which I don't pretend to understand at all. It's coming from the silence on the dock of the bay,
from the brave, the bold, the battered heart of Chevrolet. Democracy is coming to the USA.
It's coming from the sorrow in the street, the holy places where the races meet. From the homicidal bitching that goes down in every kitchen to determine who will serve and who will eat. From the wells of disappointment where the women kneel to pray
for the grace of God in the desert here, in the desert far away. Democracy is coming to the USA.
WSN.
Gino Soldo on the love card.
Sail on, sail on, oh mighty ship of state, to the shores of mean, as the reefs of greed, through the swaths of hate. Sail on, sail on.
It's coming to America first, the cradle of the best and of the worst. It's here they've got the reins of machinery for change, and it's here they've got the spiritual thirst. It's here the family's broken, and it's here the lonely say that the heart has got to open in a fundamental way. Democracy is coming to the USA. It's coming from the women and the men. Oh, darling, we'll be making love again. We'll be going down so deep the river's gonna weep and the mountain's gonna shout amen. It's coming like the tidal flood beneath the lunar sway, imperial, mysterious, in amorous array. Democracy is coming to the USA. Sail on, sail on, almighty ship of state, to the shores of need, past the reefs of greed, through the swaths of hate. Sail on, sail on, sail on. I'm sentimental, if you know what I mean. I love the country, but I can't stand the scene. And I'm neither left or right, I'm just staying home tonight, getting lost in that hopeless little scream. But I'm stubborn as those garbage bags that time cannot decay. I'm a junk, but I'm still holding up this little wild bouquet. Democracy is coming to the USA. To the USA.
There has to be a way out of the mess we find ourselves in this world. Maybe UB Blake, who died at 96, has the answer in the last song I'd like to play, titled Love Will Find a Way. He sang this song in 1978 at a Peter Appleyard show. Enjoy.
In 1921, Miller and Lyles, Cecil and Blake wrote Shuffle Along. That was the first Negro show to play Broadway. I only wrote three songs for the show. If you've never been vamped by brown skin, Love Will Find a Way, which was a theme song. You will hear it now. I will play the medley of Shuffle Along, and I will try and sing Love Will Find a Way. Thank you. skies are gray. Love like ours can never be ruined. Cupid's not schooled that way. Dry each tear, dimmed eye. Clouds will soon roll by. Though fate may lead us astray, my darling, mark what I say. Love will find.
Bye, folks. Hope you enjoyed the show. See you next month.